So when we had that opportunity, we thought, oh, this is great for us. And CBA were more than happy to sort of support that.
AgriFutures Australia acknowledges the First Nations people as the traditional custodians of the lands and waters of which we live, learn and work. We pay our respects to past, present and future elders of these nations. This is AgriFutures On Air, brought to you by AgriFutures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture. Hello and welcome. My name is Georgia Pugh and you are listening to a special podcast series on AgriFutures On Air on sustainable finance. I'm joined today by Michael Gooden of Old Man Creek. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Georgia.
It's great to have you on the podcast, Michael. Now, thanks for joining us. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and your farm, Old Man Creek?
Yeah, thanks, Georgia. Yeah, well, our family farm is located 70 kilometres west of Wagga in the Riverina, southern New South Wales. We're sort of fourth, fifth generation family place there, primarily running or Angus Cattle Stud is our main enterprise and sort of grass-fed beef on the side of it. My wife and I have been running that business since 2010. In that period of time, we sort of changed the business from genuine mixed farm to 100% grazing. We've been sort of cell grazing now since sort of 2014 continuously, 100% livestock. Yeah, that's sort of our main enterprise, I suppose.
And how many cows do you run, Michael?
That's a little bit of a fluid number. What we try to say is we match our stocking rate to carrying capacity, so that changes every year. We in and around probably 5,000 DSE is where we try to sit. Our rainfall has been from 150 mils to 860 mils in that sort of period and everywhere in between. So we've had in 2019 we got down to 45 head and we've been up to sort of 350, 400. Our core enterprise is about 120 registered Angus cows. That's sort of what we stick on. We don't try and dip into them too much, but we'll either run more followers or get trade stock on depending on what our seasonal conditions allow. We run very much a no-feed policy, so we will adjust our stocking rate to match our feed supply rather than buy or sell, make hay or feed hay. We buy and sell livestock instead.
Yeah, that's great. How many bulls do you typically aim to sell each year then?
We try to. That is the main enterprise. It being a seed stock business and relatively new, we only established the stud in 2016, so it does take time. But, you know, the last 2 to 3 years, we've been selling sort of between 30 and 40 bulls a year. It would be great to grow that, but you've just got to grow as the quality of those animals become available and the demand for them becomes available through a client base too. We're probably, the reality of what we're trying to do is we're basically having to pinch clients from somewhere else. There's a lot of Angus studs around. It's a very competitive industry. We're not getting many clients coming in that are just, you know, buying a farm and getting into cattle, so to speak. So we're really having to work on, you know, as hard as it is in some ways, pinching clients from somewhere else. So we've got a few different breeding objectives that is probably heading us in a little bit different direction from a grass-fed perspective and very maternal-focused, hopefully profit-focused as well. So those things are a little bit of a point of difference, but it's still, like for us, realistically, the cattle are still a tool to manage our ecosystem that we operate in. We're big firm believers of that. So I enjoy genetics. You know, it's a passion of ours, but they're really still just a tool. And so not everyone needs to be running livestock or cattle, that is, probably to get good ecosystem outcomes. But we enjoy it and they're a pretty convenient tool and they fit in well into our property.
Fantastic. On this podcast, we're really interested in learning about sustainable finance, and I understand that you've got a sustainable finance project that you've done recently. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah. So as a business, we refinanced in 2023, and that was from one of the major four banks to another one of the major fours. And as part of that, in addition to that, was the ability to take on a green loan as it was advertised. At the start of 2023, we invested as a business in a soil carbon project. and that was a significant cost. It was sort of $70,000 to us to undertake the program and to do the baselining. And so that activity then became eligible, and it was probably just good timing in some ways. It was good timing when we were refinancing that we sort of took on this green loan. So from the bank's perspective, they could see that as a separate sort of activity that could be financed separately to what our other longer-term finance was, which was sort of a bit of a hangover from our family succession and, you know, us taking on the business and all that type of thing.
And how did you learn about the sustainable finance green loan option, Michael?
Yeah, well, I suppose it was an advertisement is the simplest way. Through with the CBA that we refinanced to, I had been at a chat, a discussion with a conference one day with a lady, Carmel Ungins, who was in the sustainable sort of section of the Commonwealth Bank. And so, she was talking about that product and their desire to invest in that area and probably promote where they're, you know, who the businesses they're supporting and some of the activities that they're doing. And I think I'd also had the privilege of seeing a few other talks over the years around the importance of where this market's going to go in terms of the money market's going to go and how banks are going to have to be responsible of where they're investing their capital. You sort of hear about pressure coming on the coal industries and that type of thing. And so I think agriculture's sort of going to be in the crosshairs at some point. So when we had that opportunity, we thought, oh, this is great for us. And CBA were more than happy to sort of support that.
And what were your what were the steps involved with actually getting the loan across and signed and sealed?
Yeah, well, I suppose it was meeting the criteria, I suppose, and that was, for us, that was the soil carbon project. So that was, it was almost for us, it was like a one-off capital investment. That's how we were seeing it. It's a pretty big upfront cost. We looked at it as the project itself as an investment that we could make on the farm. So it was a $70,000 investment, and we had a few different options of, there's always things you could spend capital on, I suppose, and we were wanting to reinvest back into the business. And we had a few different options around, you know, fencing and wire and fertilizer and tree plantations, a few things like that. And also the soil carbon project was on the table. So it certainly met the criteria of what CBA were looking at from a green loan in terms of that a new activity, but it was something that was going to generate a return over a longer period of time and also probably be able to be paid back through the revenue that is generated from it. That's, I think the banks got an interest in getting their money back at some point in time. So, yeah, and I mean, I think basically we just met the criteria. For us, we were attracted to it because the margin on the loan was less than what our term loan was, which is always an attraction. It was sort of 1.75, I think, percent less than, which is not to be sneezed at. That would, you know, be basically our customer margin, if not more than that. So that was an attractive thing for them. I think in the scheme of things with CBA, it's not going to send them out the back door in a hurry, but it's a significant saving for us as a business. You know, it's probably, don't know the exact numbers, it's probably 20, maybe 30% of our borrowings, and, you know, 1.7% off that margin is, it adds up. It's good.
That does sound attractive. And there's other benefits too, presumably, that you can get from the project. Can you tell us a bit more about what you're hoping to achieve over the full term of the project?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty noisy space at the moment, soil carbon. We were confident to invest in it because of what we'd seen other people doing similar practices do. So we're sort of cell grazing using perennial-based pastures. And so we were reasonably confident from some of the results that had been achieved through some of the sort of pioneers of in the soil carbon space that we could achieve with our grazing management, we could achieve good results storing carbon probably at depth. So there's a fair bit of noise in the space. And at the moment, you know, our project has been tested down to 1.2 metres. We've done 55 cores over a project area of 350 hectares. So not a large scale, but very sort of rigorously tested. And that's been split up into, 7 or 8 different strata or something like that. So pretty rigorous testing and measuring of the project. Through our management, we had some additionality that we had to meet. And in our situation, that additionality was introducing fecal seeding of legumes, which is a bit of a mouthful. It's basically giving access to, for the livestock, to some legumes, so Desmanthus pregardis, and we're using some lucerne as well. And so the animals can have access to it, and especially in some of the unarable areas on our farm. And then on some of the arable areas of our farm, we're going to do a bit more of an intensive fertiliser program, which is not something we've done a lot of in the last 10 years. So we're going to be putting on some rock phosphate and some lime, not in huge amounts, but sort of probably more regular applications. So, yeah, they're the two main project changes. I think the other thing that sat well with us was that the stage and age that our business is at, I'm in my early 40s, and I felt really comfortable that, you know, a 25-year project for us is something that we could sort of manage on our watch as such. So I was, yeah, very privileged position in a lot of ways to not have that. It's not like I was in my 70s and looking at handing on to the next generation and I was going to potentially burden them with this 25-year project. And it wasn't like I had a, you know, a 20-year-old son who was chomping at the bit or daughter to come back into the business to take over. So we were in this sweet spot with my wife and I that, you know, probably 25-year clean run at us running our own business without impacting on either the previous or the next generation. We really like to see our business, you know, we're just sort of land stewards and we're just here for a very short period of time. So that's our mindset, although the reality is that we've got pieces of paper that attach us to the land. You know, the bank's quite interested to know that we physically own it. We don't necessarily see it like that, but the reality is that that's the world we live in. And yeah, I certainly didn't take it lightly, the commitment of a 25-year project, but I felt comfortable that we could do that at the stage and age that we were in our business, but probably fully recognise that not a lot of people are in that situation. Unless you're in your early 40s, you're probably not in that position. And we were very privileged to be the masters of our own destiny at that point in time, with being able to, you know, look forward 25 years and say, well, we can do this on our watch. I suppose, what are we trying to achieve out of it? Like, ultimately, the one liner for that is to increase our soil carbon and do that profitably over that period of time. We're also wanting to achieve the production benefits from that. So run a sort of standalone to the soil carbon project, but run a profitable and sustainable business for that 25-year period as well. And I think we see the hand-in-hand improving soil carbon and improving the production of our business. Both of those things go sort of hand-in-hand. So we're not really going to do one without the other.
Yeah, fantastic. And like you said, you got the lower interest rate for the loan term as well through the sustainable finance. So that's on top of the additional benefits that you'll get through that project. What are you hoping to do with the soil carbon credits down the track when you do eventually get them across the line?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Georgia. Like, I suppose the reality for us is it's a fair bit for that to occur. So one, we've got to you know, do the practice, get the measure, and then if we have increased our soil carbon, then we'll be potentially issued with ACCUs. At that point in time, like the earliest that could possibly happen for us would be sort of 2028, 2029, realistically. Like we're not probably in the mindset to go and retest. Like our project was declared in October 2023. So it wouldn't be, like their five-year period will be October 2028. We probably won't retest long before that, just because the significant cost in retesting. I think we do have to take that like 25-year, it's actually really technically 30-year horizon at this project. So the concept of coming in 2 or 3 years' time and retesting and then trying to take the cream off it, that doesn't sit well with me. Like ultimately, you know, we had about 33,000 tonnes of carbon on our place. It was measured, you know, on the day of our baselining. That's what the measurements were. So ultimately what is that, 2053, we've got to have 33,001 tonnes of carbon. We are hoping for sort of 50,000, I suppose, ideally. So the long answer is that we'll just look at, if we are generating ACCUs, we'll just treat them like any other commodity that we're producing on our farm. They are a separate, like just because you're generating them doesn't mean that we have to sell them. Our ambition is, if we're fortunate enough to produce them, is to, we'd really like to be able to deal with people directly in our supply chain, like just from our own business and our own personal goals. We'd love to be able to offer them potentially to, you know, our accountant, our law firm, some of the people who we get our power from or that slaughter our animals or our transport company or that type of thing. Ideally, we'd love to be able to deal with sort of local family businesses as well. But money will talk. We're not denying that. But I think as a package, we'd really like to be able to offer that to people in our direct supply chain. And probably recognising full well by that period of time, like, you know, we'll be talking 2029, I think there'll be people that are looking around thinking, oh, hang on, like this 2030 deadline to be carbon neutral is getting pretty close. I would like to think supply and demand wise that there'll be more demand for ACCUs than there is supply. And knowing full well that basically if you haven't baselined by now, you're going to be very dubious to whether you're going to have ACCUs available by that period of time. So, and that was probably one of the other motivations for us doing it when we did, was that knowing that the reality of that timeline it takes to get the project done and re-measured and boxes ticked and, you know, I's dotted and all that, because there's a fair bit in it, really.
And I suppose it'll provide a diversification of income option for you as well. I bet there's a few farmers out there scratching their heads thinking about how they could diversify. So it's exciting to hear about your experience.
Yeah, well, I think one other thing too with it, Georgia, is we definitely don't want to be in the category of you need to be carbon neutral to sell your product. Like, and, you know, can you demonstrate that? So being on the front foot with that, I think, was important. So, yeah, our ambition from our beef business perspective is to be able to produce carbon negative beef, ideally, that has attached to it the ACCUs are required to offset any emissions that product will produce going down the supply chain. The reality for us in our existing business is most of our business is done with fellow farmers, and so they're not probably the best market for needing those ACCUs potentially, because they, if they're well run, they probably are going to be in a similar position, but you just don't know where the market's going to be at. You know, the US or the EU or whoever might say, no, you know, we're going to need to know your number, so to speak, and we wanted to be on the front foot with that. And I think also we're not really doing the carbon in isolation. We've been part of one of the original people in Australia to do the ecological verification outcome, which is ecological monitoring of the property. We've been doing that since 2018. We're also involved in another natural capital project through La Trobe Uni to sort of try and measure not just the soil health, but all the other things that are going on and as part of a functioning farm, but also a functioning ecosystem. So I think our ambition longer term is to sort of package the carbon up with a natural capital story as well, and be able to offer that as a whole. You know, product coming from this out of this business is carbon neutral and improving the ecosystem around it, as well as, you know, us as a family contributing to our local community.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And you've got to be in the game, right? Be on the front foot, like you said, to have that flexibility down the track. Have there been any hiccups or hurdles with the project, Michael? How have you found the reporting requirements, for instance? Are they pretty onerous or are they straightforward?
I would have to describe the reporting as onerous, I suppose, like the reality of it is. Like but I think that's just, in a lot of ways, I'm actually really pleased that that is the case, that the company that has done our soil carbon project, CarbonLink, they're, at this point in time, like they're really the only company that's sold soil carbon, or they've been issued soil carbon ACCUs at any scale. So they genuinely know what is required and what records need to be kept. And so, yeah, it is a bit onerous in a lot of ways, but I think that probably demonstrates like it's not just another tick and flick exercise. It's something to be taken pretty seriously. And, you know, we're looking at it like that. This is not sort of a short-term cash grab for us. It's a longer-term, very long-term and quite strategic business decision for us to make. And like I mentioned before, it's not something that we're doing. We're not sort of seeing the dollar signs. We're doing it as part of a bigger picture. Like, I think the other, you know, for us really is we don't want to be in a position where we can't access all the markets that are on offer. And also, we certainly don't want to be in the position where our financier is coming back to us and saying, oh, look, mate, we're not happy with some of these practices you're doing. Can you know what can you do to demonstrate that you are doing the right thing by your land? So, yeah, aware of both on both those sides. It's the small experience that I've had on some of the boards I sit on is that those questions are being asked at the board table around, is our, you know, are we keeping our nose clean and are we doing things that our shareholders would be happy with? So I've experienced it from that side as well. And I think, you know, you've got to be able to look down the barrel and say, yeah, we are doing the right things. And if those questions are being asked at the couple of little boards that I'm on, like you can imagine that they're definitely being asked at in those bigger companies. And I just think that's going to happen pretty quickly, really. And I think on the other side too, like what's really the downside to being accountable for what we're trying to do? It sits right with us in terms of being aware of what our emissions are and how we fit into the ecosystem with, you know, running cattle like that. They often get a bit of a bad rap. And so we're really wanting to demonstrate that they're actually part of the solution rather than a part of the problem.
Perhaps one piece of advice for other producers might be getting help with the reporting and measurement for the soil carbon project then.
Yeah, I really do. And I get concerned at the moment that unfortunately I just don't see like a genuine third party sort of independent help. And I really reckon there's a spot like if it's in the ERF or, you know, in AgriFutures or something like that to actually have, because everyone's trying to sell you something at the moment. And I think that's a really sort of concerning spot to be. And, you know, the reality is there is some pretty shonky operators out there that I don't think have got their head around the longevity of some of these projects and the importance of getting them set up right to start with. So I really reckon it'd be great. Like, yeah, from an individual personal business, it's extremely important to get to seek, you know, independent advice. And, it's a difficult space because, you know, you can understand that there's businesses out there wanting to make money out of it, but I just don't think that some of them have got their head around the seriousness of the project that you're taking on. Like you're putting a 25-year caveat on a property, and I don't think that, unless you've been in business for more than 25 years, I don't think you should have the power to sort of do that to someone else because we know that the landholder is going to be around hopefully for that long, and they're probably thinking in that frame. But I don't necessarily think all the sort of project proponents have got that mindset. I think they might be sort of seeing the dollar signs in the shorter term without really thinking about those long-term implications.
Is there any other advice you'd give someone to help them start their journey with their soil carbon project and sustainable finance?
Yeah, I'd just be really clear in your own business with what you're trying to achieve. And I think the thing, like the word additionality sort of comes up a lot, and I think you need to recognise that and respect that, but there's actually, in the current methodologies that are out there, there's actually a fair bit of flexibility in some of that. So, like, I think you want to be doing it because it's actually in line with what you're wanting to achieve as a business and go down that same path rather than sort of go chasing the next fad as such. Like, carbon might be seen as a bit of a fad at the moment, but I think you need to be clear with what you're trying to achieve longer term. If that lines up with what you're trying to do as an overall business, then I think it's something that's really worthwhile. If you can just see dollar signs and opportunity, I actually really don't think you're probably going about it the right way. That would be my personal advice.
Keeping it as a business decision then and thinking long term.
Yeah. So for us in our business, we wanted to, a lot of those things that we were wanting to do were going to help us if we went and did this project in its own right. Like, it's not to be sneezed at that investment as such, but it's not a make or break for us either. If we didn't achieve the soil carbon outcomes that we were anticipating, it's not a huge loss. Like it's, you know, 70 grand, but it's not going to send us out the back door. I think where it'll prove over time is, say, in 5 years' time, if we've demonstrated a really good capacity to generate soil carbon, it'll give us a lot of confidence to go into the potential next expansion in our business to say, well, look, we did this on this block. You know, would we consider doing it on somewhere else? I can't say at this point in time whether we have done that. So I sort of, you know, we need to get the runs on the board. If that was the case, though, then that's when we'd really be leaning on our finance again to say, well, look, we've demonstrated X, Y, and Z. You know, we want to do this again and potentially also with some income coming from that, not only from the production of that expansion, but also from the soil carbon. that's when it'd get really interesting. But at this point in time, that's probably a bit of a pie in the sky. We don't have the evidence to prove that we can do that. So we'll have to wait and see. But I know that we're going to find that out sooner than a lot of other people. So we want to be in that spot.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you going to take any more green loans or similar down the track?
Well, I'd love to if it's, you know, it's like any decision you're making, but is it going to head us towards where we want to be? Is it going to be a good decision for us as a business? And you know, like all these things, we're in partnership with the bank. Is it going to be in their interest as well? So we need them as much as they need us to us, probably not as much the other way, but, you know, they're an important part of our business, realistically. So we see that as that, you know, part of that relationship. And our, but you know, the individual manager that we've got, he was really comfortable with it. Like, it was the first soil carbon project that he'd done as such, which was interesting or sort of scary in some ways, but interesting in a lot of ways. But he's very interested in what is going on in this space. And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, don't necessarily want to be, you know, leading it too much, but it's, I'm comfortable that we're sort of close enough to the beginning of it, but also we're really confident we know what's going on.
And as you said before, the benefits that you've been getting with the lower interest rate through the green loan and the flow-on effects to productivity and quality improvement that you'll get down the track makes this a really net positive outcome then. Are there any other KPIs that you're hoping to achieve from the project, Michael?
Oh, well, when we, it was a really difficult thing to make, decision to make like that, Georgia, because we had some estimates from the project proponent about estimations on like tons of carbon per year that we would be able to sequester. And so like putting that information in and based over the 25-year project and also, you know, estimating what the soil carbon, what the ACCU price will be over a long period of time. Like, there's a few big moving parts in that, but they were estimating, you know, an internal rate of return of between sort of 15 and 30%, which for us was something that we were, you know, some of the other investments that we were looking at making on farm were in and around that as well. You know, if we're going to go and buy a farm next door, we're not going to get that type of return, internal rate of return, but then we're going to need a heap more money than that too. So that was sort of comparable to some of the other on-farm infrastructure stuff that we could have looked at. So yeah, we were comfortable with it like that, but really recognizing that, you know, the tons per hectare per year is a little bit unknown at this point in time. Like, we're estimating that we can generate, you know, a reasonable amount, but we don't really know that yet. And we certainly don't know what the carbon price is going to be. Like, it's $35 this week, but I wouldn't know where it's going to be. People talk of, you know, doubling and tripling. I know that with anything, it's a commodity and it's going to be a supply and demand thing. And I also know that to generate supply is difficult because of the process that you've got to go through to get it. So that, yeah, having those two factors is probably in our favour. But the reality is, like, because it is a commodity, that if the demand goes really high and the price goes up a long way, then demand will come on in time. So that's just the reality of it. It is a commodity, and it that will be governed by supply and demand. I think if you look at a macro scale, like, if we do as a world, you know, start reducing the burning of fossil fuels and gas and all these things, which is we're meant to be trying to do, although, you know, there's still new coal mines being approved. So we've got a long way to go in that front. But the reality is we don't actually need to offset a heap of emissions if we, you know, get our house in order. But at this point in time, the signals are looking like it's going to still take a little while to offset those emissions. So I think there'll be a 25, sort of 40-year period where we'll probably have need a fair bit of demand to meet the, or a fair bit of supply to meet the demand that's going to be in the environment.
To the reporting aspect, Michael, for the sustainable loan, is this a yearly commitment that you have to give or every couple of years with CBA?
Yeah, it's just part of our annual review with CBA, the sustainable loan. And, like, you know, on our statement, it's just another line. It's a separate loan, but it's just another line of it's just been drawn down 70K and our other loans at what it is. So there's no other sort of separate reporting as such. The repayments on that are just a separate line as well. But there's nothing else really very drastically different from that perspective. So it wasn't, it's not anything onerous from our end. And it'll be reviewed similar to our other loans as well. So from that side of it, it's just very much the same as our existing loans. It's just that it happens to be sort of branded with that green loan. I know on our web login as such, it's called a green loan in the actual login. So there's, someone thinks it's good.
So overall, how would you rate this as an experience with sustainable finance, Michael?
Oh, it's been great. Yeah, it's whether we would have got, we were going to go and do this sort of regardless in a lot of ways, but it's comforting to know that we're supported in that space. So that was comforting from the bank's perspective. Yeah, and the process that we went through was simple. It hasn't been onerous like that. The soil carbon project itself, that's where it's been onerous and just more about understanding what's going on. And it wasn't sort of contingent on one or the other. I know one of the things that was comforting from our end is from the experience of the people who have been issued with ACCUs down the track, you have to get that consent from your bank to allow the carbon project to go ahead and to have that registered on your title. And that was comforting from our end to know that if CBA are happy to back us in the green loan to fund the carbon project, that they're giving their consent for us to go ahead with the soil carbon project. So there's that part of it was comforting, because I know one of the other major banks that was an issue with one of the guys getting issued ACCUs was they had, at the 11th hour, they had an issue with their bank actually having that caveat on the title of the soil carbon project. So I think that part of it, and, there's 70-odd pages of legal contract in the soil carbon project that someone's made up and read through and whatever. So you can imagine, the big banks, lawyers scheming through all that, looking at everything that's going on. There's a fair bit of information in there. I must admit we weren't across it. Well, we had our solicitors read it as such, but there's a fair bit of information in that. And so, we just need to be pretty careful of what your legal obligation is, I suppose.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And what kinds of best practice activities have you implemented to help you achieve these goals?
Yeah. So for us, we understand that livestock are key to helping manage the soil carbon, improve the soil carbon and improve the ecosystem. So we're running as few mobs as we possibly can. So we really only ever run two mobs, maybe three mobs over the 380 hectares in our main block, and then we lease another 260. And we're running those sort of all as one contingent. Yeah, we're moving animals probably every other day, sort of every 2 to 3 days, having them in sort of 3 to 5 hectares at a time, depending on the mob size and depending on how much the grass is growing. But we use a lot of temporary electric fencing to move the livestock. So we've got sort of permanent paddocks. We've got 25 or so permanent paddocks on the main block. And then so the other lease boxes, some of those are a little bit bigger. But we use that temporary electric fencing to subdivide those paddocks. We've invested significantly in the stock water system. So we've got hydrants all around the farm, 45 hydrants, and we've got water within about 150 to 200 metres at any point on the farm. So that allows us, with the temporary electric fencing and the water, portable water, the livestock are obviously portable. So wherever they are, we just move them around the property. Depending on the time of year and how much the grass is growing, we're sort of on minimum probably 30 days, but ideally sort of 45-day recovery out to, over the summertime, we might get out to 150 days. We're probably a little bit shorter than that most of the time, but, 60 to 90 days. We're really just monitoring that the whole time. One of the things that I think that really helps out is we're really big on our pasture budgeting. So every month we do a full sort of how many kilos of dry matter do we have on the farm at this point in time. I don't get too hung up on is it growing at 20 kilos or 40 kilos or 90 kilos. I just want to know if I said I'd put those animals in, if I put 150 cows with calves at foot in 3 hectares and I said it was I estimated it was going to last them 36 hours, I want to make sure in that after 36 hours that I was right or I was wrong. And if I made a mistake, then I adjust the planning for the rest of the area that mob's been allocated. So it's about replanning is as important as the plan itself. And so we're constantly juggling, did we get that right? Have we got enough feed? Is the feed behind where we're moving from growing? Is it recovering like we're anticipating? Are we moving too fast, too slow? Have we got enough animals? Have we got not enough? And we're in the middle of all that. We've got a seed stock business that isn't as flexible as you'd like. So that's why we run about sort of 60 to 70% of our carrying capacity is that core seed stock. And then we'll trade stock on top of that. And when we say trade stock, that might be as simple as, you know, running some more heifers and joining them with our own bulls to potentially sell off to a client, or growing some steers out, or some, you know, we often trade some lambs as well, just to give us some diversity in our grazing and enterprise market exposure in that as well. And yeah, I like running sheep every now and then just to remind me why we don't do it as our core enterprise. And just to provide some diversity. But we're always, you know, I don't want it to sound exhausting, but we're always looking forward about how much feed have we got on hand? Are we matching our supply with our demand? And probably trying to sell that feed as such to the highest bidder, in terms of the highest bidder of the enterprise that can afford to pay the most for that grass. And that's probably why our core enterprise is that seed stock business, because it's got a little bit different price point. But then if we're not selling bulls at what we're budgeting for, then that price point can change pretty quickly. If we sell 10 less bulls than what we were planning on, that's a big, big difference. So yeah, we just keep modeling that. We're monitoring our pastures a lot, the growth rate, and we're also monitoring our soil health. So the physical chemistry in the soil, what's the nutrients that are in there, and also the biology that's in there. We're looking, monitoring that, and hopefully trying to improve that. Yeah, not necessarily continually, but it's, yeah, heading it in the right direction all the time.
Yeah, terrific. It's so great hearing about your experience with all this, mate, and there's a lot of balls to juggle with this sort of project. Is there anything else you'd like to share about the Sustainable Finance Project, or any other advice or tips you'd like to give other producers who might be looking to start something similar?
The advice I would do, there's a lot of myriad of things around the sustainable financing, I suppose. I suppose a couple of things is I wouldn't underestimate how serious this is, I think. I don't have any inside knowledge as such, but I just think that the banks are going to have to demonstrate where they're lending money to. So I think that at some point in time, we're going to have to be accountable to that. There's going to be, and I wouldn't underestimate the period of time that it takes to prove whether you're carbon negative or carbon neutral or carbon positive, I suppose. So not underestimating that. Personally, ourselves, we feel like we've got a moral obligation to do that for our children and their children as well. So that sits well with us. We're happy to sort of put our money where our mouth is from that perspective. But probably anything that trumps all of that is just really seek good information about be clear on what you're wanting to do. And if it lines up, you know, work with people who've got the same values and beliefs as you do, rather than the first shiny brochure or fancy car that drives up the driveway. Just really, really do your due diligence on it. I think it's really comforting that the banks are wanting to support this. I think you'd have to be, the reality is they've probably got obligations to do it, but I still would like to think also that they've genuinely can see their benefit from the longer term as well.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks so much for joining us and sharing your experience with the Green Loan and your soil carbon project. We look forward to seeing how the project progresses over the coming years.
Yeah, no drama, Georgia. We've only got another 23 years to go.
This episode of AgriFutures On Air is brought to you by the National Challenges and Opportunities team at AgriFutures Australia. The National Challenges and Opportunities portfolio is responsible for engaging with key industry stakeholders on big issues such as sustainability, carbon, waste and energy, and shining a light on the opportunities they present. For more information on sustainable financing or a deeper dive into the costs and benefits for Australian producers, check out the Knowledge Hub on the AgriFutures Australia website.